Alright, this is Pure Decking for Thursday, March 24th, 2016. I am Morps. This is a show about stuff that interests me. Tonight, I am drinking Hard Ginger Ale by Kona Island. It tastes like Sprite. Madman, what are you drinking and what does it taste like?
I'm drinking Cold Snap, and it tastes like... Well, it's not very hoppy, so... A dark lager, kind of.
Okay. Dedek, what are you drinking and who does it taste like?
Puerto Rican rum, and I don't taste it anymore. I've drank too much.
Like, and who does it taste like?
Say what?
Selma Hayek.
Yeah, I was seeing if he got that or not.
I almost said your mom, but, you know.
That's kind of rude.
It's one of them days, and I don't care.
All right, wonderful well, day. You're going to really enjoy. So speaking of kind of rude, now I deep dived this a little bit, actually, because I was concerned there were security implications. But so we're going to start off here with the article in Business Insider. Yesterday... A lot of, well, I guess it would be day before yesterday. I think it was Tuesday. There were a lot of JavaScript Node.js projects that broke. Like, a lot of them broke. And to explain it is a little bit odd. So I guess I should, you know, I'm kind of using Madman and Esma the barometer here. You know what JavaScript is?
Yes.
You know what Node is?
Node? As in a programming language or just something where a lot of things connect?
Well, Node.js is a JavaScript framework.
Okay.
So it's used... It's used in a lot of places. But interfaces to some back-end server code will sometimes run it. It's a... Kind of its own programming language based off... Well, it's not really. It's a big-ass framework around
It's an
JavaScript.
Extension of Java.
With JavaScript.
A framework that Java needs, JavaScript needs to run in.
Yeah, that's well, close enough.
But it's not a JavaScript framework.
Well, okay, what do you want to call it then?
It has modules that are written in JavaScript. But it's not JavaScript framework.
Well, does it like translate for, Java for other programs to use?
No, it's for running JavaScript.
I mean. Right? Yeah. No. I agree completely with that part. Yes, but it's not. It's not.
You want to look on Wikipedia?
Does it?
Hold on, I'm gonna look here and see now.
From Java to I don't know anything else.
No. Okay.
Okay.
For one thing, you're talking
in software development,
nuts, Madman. It's JavaScript. It's not Java. They are not
okay.
The same thing.
Oh, Cycross, now that I know this is annoying one person on the internet, guess what's going to happen every time I talk about this?
Nice. Okay. Node.js is an open source cross-platform runtime environment for developing server-side web applications. Although Node.js is not a JavaScript framework, many of its basic modules are written in Java, and developers can write new modules in JavaScript. The runtime environment interprets JavaScript using Google's V8 JavaScript engine.
Okay.
Can you write something else in a different language in this framework use it?
Didn't that what I just said?
Okay.
It interprets other...
We're having a lot of argument about what this thing is, but
who cares? Move on with the story.
A lot of websites rely on it. Netflix. There were some big ones at the bottom of the article that was listed as being affected.
Google.
Google and KIK, the chat program, actually complained about it, and that's comical for a reason here. So, this article. Now, according to the programmer that this all comes up against, he claims this is a hit piece on him. And I can explain that a little bit, but we'll go ahead and go through the article here. This week, one programmer broke a whole mess of the software the internet runs on by deleting a simple program consisting of 11 lines of code. Everything is okay now, but it's a strange case that involves copyright lawyers, a petulant developer, and a behind-the-scenes look at how tech titans like Facebook, Spotify, and Netflix make the sausage. Really?
Wow.
It all starts with a developer named Azar Kokulu. I'm probably saying that wrong. K-O-C with a little dangly bit. I'm American. Sorry. I don't know what that's actually called.
It's C with a penis.
Okay, fair. U-L-U. Kokulu? Kokulu? I honestly don't know how to say the man's name. I'm not trying to insult him. So we're just going to call him Azar from now on. Who wrote a piece of code called Kik, K-I-K, an extension for the popular programming language Node.js. Azar put up his Kik module on NPM, essentially an app store for Node.js programmers. It's a repository. It's a very popular repository for JavaScript and Node.js. Well, it's for Node.js, but it's JavaScript input. Anyways, we're not getting into that argument again. NPM's... Fine, we're going to call it the App Store for Node.js. I hate that description. I don't think it's technically correct. We're going to go with that as a free download. So KIK, the popular social network of the same name, took notice and sent... Okay, this is not what happened, but... took notice and sent Azar an email requesting that he change the name of his module. By Azar's own admission in a blog post, KIK's initial request was reasonable. Now, I've got those emails because they both sides posted them. I don't necessarily agree because it comes off kind of mafioso style. Like, hey, you're going to do this, or, you know, we're going to kick your ass with lawyers. So, reasonable is not exactly. So
they had a reasoned argument. We have more money than you and lawyers. You're changing what you're doing. Well, you have more money than me and lawyers. I guess I'm going to change what I'm doing.
Well, anyways... So let me. I'm not going to read the whole article here because that I wanted to get that interesting intro bit here because there's certain the whole thing is portraying Azar. Oh well, he's just obstinate, right? And it's going to get even more obvious why they're portraying him that way. So I guess to summarize what actually ended up coming of this. So he was writing a Node.js module called Kik, and there's a chat program which I may have heard of before, but I didn't really remember called Kik. Until, you know, just now, it's like, oh, yeah, that exists. Okay. And so they email him wanting him to rename his package to something else so they could use the name. His response was basically, nah, I'm using it. Too bad. So then they come back at him and it's like, yeah, well, you know, if you don't, you know, don't give up the name, our trademark lawyers are going to make your life a living hell. And now... I guess part of this is so the email. Let me just go get the emails. I'm trying to think how. So there's back and forth between Azar and Kik, and Azar basically told Kik to go pound dirt, right? Because especially because their second email was threatening him with lawyers, and he basically tells them to fuck off. He doesn't want to change the name of his project, and so Kik. Gets a hold of the people who run NPM and tells them that Azar's being unreasonable, he's refusing to work with them, and they think they have a better claim to the name Kik in their space. So NPM takes this namespace from Azar and gives it to the company Kik, claiming that their policy is... we want to make it the most. In the event of naming disputes, we want to go with what we feel would be the most obvious to the end user. And they said they felt that the name Kik would probably be associated with the chat program Kik, not whatever Azar was writing. And I don't even know what he was writing. And so
who had the name first. That's what it should just come down to.
And that's what a lot of people think. And so. It gets even better, though. So, Azar's first email he gets from NPM regarding this is not, hey, these people are asking you to give up the name. It's, hey, So we felt they had a better claim to it, so we took your name and we're giving that repo to them. So Ozzer said, fine, if you guys aren't going to respect me as an author, fuck you, I'm pulling all of my packages. And Ozzer did. He went in and pulled, he had over 270 packages in NPM, including a stupid little module that's 11 lines long called Padding Left. Or did I reverse the name? I may have reversed the name. Left Pad. Okay, called Left Pad. So, Left Pad literally appended spaces to the beginning of a string to pad something to the left. That's why I got the name backwards, is because I was thinking of it backwards, but it's literally a string operation, right? But it was depended on by Babel and a whole bunch of these other big, and some of his other packages too, were dependent on by these big Node.js projects, things that Google uses, things that Netflix uses. And so suddenly all these people's code wouldn't build because he pulled all of his modules. And the way NPM works is, it was Babel and React were the two big ones. And the way NPM works, it's not like the Linux repos where the repos have their own copies. They all basically reference from the modules pretty much to GitHub. So it's kind of a mess to begin with. But so he yanks all of his modules, and suddenly all these big name projects quit working. So a lot of people are mad at him for yanking his modules, right? Or, you know, they said, oh, he got all pissy and yanked his modules, and that wasn't cool because all this stuff was depending on it, and he shouldn't have been, you know, if he knew all this stuff was depending on his code, he shouldn't have been so flippant about pulling it. But at the same time, I understand where the dude's coming from. It's like, you know, if the repo is going to come at him and say, yeah, sorry, you lose, we're just taking your namespace, I don't blame him for saying, screw it, I'm going somewhere else. Now, here's where it gets really weird. Yesterday, you know, during all these builds crashes, somebody else grabbed the namespace, grabbed this guy's code, and re-uploaded it. And then got a hold of NPM to get the version number set to the same so everybody's builds would start working again. And NPM did it because of the amount of stuff that was failing.
So they reposted his stuff without his permission?
Yeah, he asked them to pull it down. So somebody else grabbed the namespace because he abdicated on it. He abandoned all of his namespaces because he pulled all of his packages from NPM. I don't know. Am I explaining this well enough?
Yeah, mm-hmm. he pulled all of his stuff because he didn't like the process on which they based him losing the rights to the name.
They arbitrarily pulled his module from him. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
he pulled all of his stuff. Someone else grabbed copies of it and put it back up under the names that he had originally posted them under.
So it gets and it gets even worse. So people start grabbing his stuff and reposting it, and they're saying, "Well, it's open source, so we can do that," which is true because that is what most Linux repos do. Is they don't link directly to the author's GitHub or their own source code. They build their own packages for their distro and then they self-host it. So there's that. But then the people who run NPM were making posts on Twitter saying, well, we put, you know, the actions of one author versus the community. We chose the greater need of the community. So they just took his stuff and put it back up. it's like that's kind of not cool. I mean, I realize it's open source and you can do that. But he specifically said, I don't want my stuff on your platform because I don't feel like I'm being treated fairly by your platform. So what did they do after he pulled it? They grabbed his stuff and put it right back on the platform. Now here's the security implication of this. Dude had 270 modules. Many of them were used. And
Are the reposts corrupted some way?
You have no way of knowing without pulling each one down and checking. So how do you know somebody didn't say, oh, I'll just grab his namespace, go to his GitHub, get his code, post a new module that does everything the old one did, and installs CryptoLocker. And it only takes one.
We'll know in a week if everyone's Netflix accounts get locked out.
But anyways, to dig deeper into this a little bit. So the Business Insider page, it is a little slanted. NPM kind of, I think they made a mistake in letting other people post his code, because he specifically said, I don't want it on there, right? And Psychros in the chat room was making a point that he used the wrong license if he wanted that kind of control of his code, which is true. I mean, open source code, you can do whatever you want with it. But so NPM made a blog post, and they're saying, well, earlier this week, many users suffered a disruption when a package that many projects depend on, directly or indirectly, was unpublished by its author as part of a dispute over a package name. The dispute generated a lot of dissension and raised many concerns because of the scale of the disruption. Blah, 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 and NPM took response. So then they lay out the timeline, and they basically go through blaming it on the author for pulling his code. And now here's the kicker. The community stepped in. It's pretty remarkable that this guy stepped in to replace left pad within 10 minutes. The other 272 affected modules were adopted by others in the community in similar time. They either republished forks of the original modules or created dummy packages to prevent malicious publishing of modules under their names. So they're lauding people for grabbing up this guy's namespace. So, and now, here's the really fun part. In their own post, there are historical reasons why it's possible to unpublish a package from the NPM registry. However, we've hit an inflection point with the size of the community and how critical NPM has become to the node in the front-end development communities. Abruptly removing a package disrupted many thousands of developers and threatened everyone's trust in the foundation of open-source software. Wrong! Wrong, sir. It threatened everyone's trust in your repository, not open-source software. I have to point that out. That's going to drive me nuts. Developers can rely on build on it, blah, blah, blah. NPM needs safeguards to keep anyone from causing so much disruption. So, they're going to make it harder to remove your packages from NPM if you publish packages up there. They claim they didn't communicate very well, and a lot of people are accusing them of stealing Ozzer's code. Which, if it is it's open source, so that's a hard claim to make.
Open source, it's not really theft. You're agreeing to let other people use your code.
True. So, it's not theft. I agree with you there. But, and that is how a lot of the Linux repos work, right?
And I do think it's crap the way they treated the programmer. If you're already depending on a dude, he's apparently valuable. You kind of don't want to arbitrarily dismiss his claims. They should have come back with an argument on why they're giving the namespace to someone else if they decided that entity deserved it more.
Well, they did. You can't, they said, just it's because it's a recognized, it's a large social network. So, and now here's the thing: they're actually posting in this blog post that NPM won't suddenly take your package name, even though that is precisely what they did to this guy. Now that. That said, and Static posted it up, they did leak their policy, and their policy does state that they try to work by communicating with both sides, and but the thing is, it sure doesn't look like they communicate with both sides. It looks like they just arbitrarily took this guy's package name.
No, they should have given it a couple days.
That's not what it says in the policy. It tells the two people that are having a dispute to work it out. If they don't work it out, NPM will step in and take action. That's all it says in the policy. All
right. Well, let me post what the guy from Kik posted, because he actually put up the full email chain, which is not fantastic because I don't think he sees what's wrong with it. Yeah, so the first email he sent, Hicks, what was his title? They actually list, they've got the guy's name is Bob Stratton in here, but he's our patent agent, not a lawyer. Here we go. So he says, we're reaching out to you as we very much like to use our name, Kick. We very much like to use our name, Kick, for an important package that we're going to release soon. Unfortunately, your use of Kick and Kick-Starter means we can't, and our users will be confused and or unable to find our package. Can we get you to rename your Kick package? And then about half an hour later, Ozzer sends back, sorry, I'm building an open source project with that name. Then the very next email is at, again, about half an hour later, we don't mean to be a dick about it, and this is kind of where the jokes have been going, but it's a registered trademark in most countries around the world, and if you actually release an open source project called Kick, our trademark lawyers are going to be banging on your door and taking down your accounts and stuff like that, and we'd have no choice but to do all of that because you have to enforce trademarks or you lose them. Can we not come to some sort of a compromise to get you to change the name without involving lawyers? Is there something we could do for you in compensation to get you to change the name?
They're even offered to pay the dude.
Well, I know, but the second email, they're threatening with the lawyers.
They kind of have to say what they are going to do. Okay. I've dealt with this kind of in the mortgage ways. If you don't say what all you're legally needing to do to protect your company, then one, it's kind of a dick thing to do because you should give someone a heads up before a lawyer gets involved.
True, but I'm like, the second email? I mean, really?
That's as opposed to saying, is there something,
you know, if they had literally reversed the paragraphs, it would have been better.
Okay, maybe offering compensation before letting you know that we'll have to let our lawyers get involved. But there's not a good time to say, hey man, our entire business model is going to be fucked if we don't sue you. We're going to have to sue you.
That could have waited for a third email, don't you think? Yeah, you could have done a second email offering compensation, and if you turned that down, then said, okay, well, we're going to have to pursue something here if you don't work with us.
Possibly. It depends on the timeline of their project, because they're actually holding up a project on this.
What'd you say, Static?
Companies don't do that, though. Companies are there to work as an entity and not to be hand-holding the little babies that this asshat is.
So, his next response to that was, haha, you're actually being a dick, so fuck you, don't email me back. And at this point, they start emailing NPM. NPM, of course, hasn't responded yet. And then at one point, Ozzer offers them, yeah, sure, you can buy it for $30,000 for the hassle of giving up my project, you bunch of corporate dicks. The guy is obviously anti-corporate. So then, they email NPM. He says, we're not getting anywhere with this. Can you guys help? We have Kick registered as a trademark. And then the very first, response he appears to have gotten, at least in the post that's trying to show Ozzer's not being cooperative, the only response Ozzer seems to get from NPM is we're going to transfer the package away, or the name from you.
And I think they followed exactly correct, because if you look at their policy, go down to exceptions, number 7 of exceptions, other things forbidden by the NPM code of conduct, such as hateful language. There you go. And so if you see behavior like this, please report it to blah, 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 email.
And they did. They said, oh, he's being mean to us.
Some things are not allowed, and we will be removed without discussion if they are brought to the attention of the NPM registry admins, including but not limited to the following. So I think perfectly they were well within their rights. The author, while sure, it may discourage from whatever he's doing, he is affecting a major corporation, a corporation, I don't know about major, but at any rate, they tried amicably to resolve it. The guy was a dick, and it escalated. Therefore, he became a little two-year-old brat who's whining and crying in the corner and decided to pull all this stuff so he can go suck dick and be done.
Okay. So, you just to understand that, you think it's okay to grab some guy's work to say, fuck you, you don't, you know, too bad?
Well, grabbing his work, the licensing he used, he said it's free to the world.
Exactly.
So it's not like he wrote it, copyrighted it, and then tried to make money on it. He wrote it and gave it out. So he doesn't have the argument of, you don't have a right to this. You gave us a right to it. You gave it to the world to be used. It sucks, but you can't change your mind once you've gone through this. You've given it out. We've built things around it.
Well, I mean,
now,
he's,
if
he's
he
also
wants to argue
no
the trademark, you just pull up who had the trademark first.
So, yeah, but I also don't believe he's under any obligation to maintain these packages.
He's not under
that's,
obligation
nope,
to maintain.
He's not,
it.
That's
did
the
someone
thing.
Else post it?
Well,
or did he post it back?
No, they posted it. Somebody else.
Then he's not maintaining
it.
Someone else is maintaining it for him.
Well, I realize that, but what I'm saying here is I think it was okay for him to pull his packages, even though it interfered with a bunch of other people.
Why?
That's fine, and it's completely good for them to put it. It's completely okay for them to put it back.
Because
I'm
you
not
are
gonna
not
say
under
it's good
any obligation to maintain a package if you don't want to.
Okay, no, I'm not saying maintain it. Why pull it though?
Oh, that was just being vindictive.
Exactly. There's nothing that he could have walked away, not maintained it, said, screw you all. I'm
no, he said he wants to find
again.
A better package manager to put him on in his own blog post, which sure. We haven't gotten to.
Oh, I already read that part. Because I was doing some research as well. But, you know, you're right. He's looking for somewhere else, hoping that the community finds something that's more quote-unquote open source or whatever he said in their thinking, where, you know, this is an open source.
Well, and that's the thing. I honestly think it's okay for other people to take his code and publish it, because that's how every other Linux repo works. Distros right. don't go back to your code. They usually have package maintainers, and you know the projects will have their own code repositories. But when you install Ubuntu, you're not building GNOME from source from GNOME's code repo. You're downloading GNOME from either the distro's servers or the distro's repositories or set of repositories they've agreed to use.
Okay.
I will vote. I think it's okay. I think it's okay.
So, okay. So,
I'm worried.
Let's backstep, though. So from the beginning, you're okay with the guy pulling his code. Okay, great.
Yes.
That's fine. He can do that. He can do that. That's fine. I think it's a little childish of him, but whatever. You're okay with people reposting his code?
Yes.
Right? Okay, good. So we're in agreement there.
However,
the biggest thing that you're worried about is injection of other things that could harm.
That is my primary concern is who the hell is maintaining this shit now? Now, honestly, I never knew this guy before, right? I don't use NPM. I know some people at work who do, which is one of the reasons
I have a counter
this.
To that. If you're not maintaining your own repository, how do you know that he's not going back and changing the package after he's posted and it's become trusted?
You don't. That's
exactly. You know.
However, things like again, the Linux distros usually have a reputation to maintain. It's just like any other brand. Why would I use Ubuntu if the repositories are full of crap code and viruses?
In fact, one way they prevent that is
around a few
you've
times.
Already said they have their own repository after something becomes trusted.
Yes.
So, this repository should have done the same thing.
I don't disagree with that. They wrote this repository around the idea of basically yanking shit from GitHub so that they didn't have to host stuff on their own, which is kind of parasitic in its own right, but that's not the point. GitHub offers that service. It just happens to be the way it works. So I am a little concerned about a repository giving up on the name where the first contact with the guy is, you know, oh, by the way, we've changed your, you know, we're giving your package name to this guy. That bothers me a little bit. I would have liked to seen a little bit more between NPM and the guy before they just grabbed his module. Because you also look at the times they're emailing him. It's late at night. Email me late at night, you might get a drunken response. So,
well, he is Middle Eastern, so you know. Hey.
Well, there's that. You're right.
And what's the time difference? And how long between when the corporation emailed and
The responses are like within half hours of each other.
Yeah.
Because as far as the corporation's response to the repository, here's a copy of our trademark. The repository now doesn't have an argument.
Actually, they do, because it's not just because you have that name trademarked for a social network and a chat application doesn't mean dick for a programming language. You know, I have no... I'm not going to assume that every module that has Google or Facebook in the name is owned by Google or Facebook. I'm going to assume they have something to do with, say, using Google or Facebook, but I'm not going to assume that they wrote it. So,
do you consider
one of those
code
weird laws?
Do you consider code a good? Like goods?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Do you consider code goods?
Code is work. Code is... It's a good in the same sense that a music or a work of literature is a good.
Okay, but like software, do you consider that a good, something you can purchase, right?
I consider it something you can buy a license to use or not, because again, code is copyrighted. Code is not like I don't buy code from you and you now have one less code. Right, it's more like it's more like a work of writing than it is a physical thing like a pot. I don't know.
Okay.
So I guess.
Well, either way.
Go ahead, man.
Whether it's a good or literature, trademark doesn't distinguish that much when it comes to brand names. They're protecting a brand name.
Well, I mean.
Try throwing up code calling it Mattel or Barbie. See how long that lasts.
It'd be an interesting fight, actually, because you'd have to be able to afford to take it to court, because you'd have to say that, you know, there's no competition between my use of the name and their use of the name. Because my understanding of trademark law is if they're in two completely unrelated fields that don't have that much of a case. Not unless I'm out there saying that Mattel has endorsed my code. In that case, yeah, they can, you know, come after me for making false statements. But if I just happen to be using that name for some reasonable reason or not so reasonable reason, I don't know. I guess
the
part of the problem here too is their
family
name
names.
Is, yeah. Part of the problem I have here though is that, you know, their name is so simple, K-I-K, and Kick. I mean, that's really hard to say that they own every usage of three letters. That'd be like Facebook saying, we're going to copyright everything that has the word face or book in it. Now, Facebook put together is different because that's a new word.
And they're not going with every combination of K-I-K. It's K-I-K by itself.
Yeah.
So find a word with it linked in there, they're not suing it over.
I know. I just, trademark law is interesting. So, I guess I kind of don't like that this company strong-armed the repo, give over the guy's name in a matter of hours. Seems like one of those things that if they had slowed down just a little bit, they could have worked out a hell of a lot better. You know what I mean?
And they might have been a little slower if the dude wasn't obstinate in his responses.
But his first response wasn't. His first response was just no.
They might have talked about it.
But yeah,
his
I mean,
response
if they
was pretty
back...
much, we're not talking about it.
Well, his first response was, I'm using this for an open source project. Sorry. I'm not changing the name. And then their immediate response to that was lawyers. You know, and maybe we can compensate you.
They have to protect their trademark, and they did offer compensation.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you on that. I just kind of feel like they could have presented themselves in a way that didn't immediately put the guy off. He's obviously anti-corporation, so that doesn't help. You know what I mean?
So he
sees it as a corporation coming in and pushing him out of the way.
Did you say that NPM is the one that turned over the guy's contact information?
No, I think they got his email off his GitHub.
Okay, because NPM has the ability to get the author email with NPM owner LS package name. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, nothing is illegal here.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to make sure. I thought I misunderstood that.
It's just whether or not they're dicks and how they handled it.
I feel like it could have been handled better. But again, I have concerns about 270 some odd packages suddenly being maintained by different people and no guarantee that any of it's clean. You know what I mean?
There wasn't a guarantee before. You're just now more aware of it.
There was reputation because the guy was a known member of the community.
Yeah.
It's also JavaScript, so anything you pull down, is you can see what it's doing. But that's not the point.
So, did they put all 270 back?
They've grabbed... according to NPM's blog post, most of the names have been grabbed.
Okay.
So, either they grabbed his code and put it back with a different maintainer, or they
grab the name so someone can't post something malicious there in its place.
Well, but I'm just saying, how do you know that any of those people who grabbed it aren't going to post something malicious on their own?
Are they known members of the community? Because that's as much of a guarantee you had before.
That's true. That's true. So, yeah, I don't know. The whole thing bothered me because I didn't much like the company just coming in and steamrolling the guy.
The only thing I could see that could have been done differently, the March 11th email with the lawyers, if they wanted to, they could have been nice and broken it up into two emails, one offering compensation, and then the next one pointing out that we will have to sue you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if they just talked to the guy a little bit better, I think they could have resolved it better. But I don't know. It's one of those things that's hard to judge, really. I mean, yeah, he came off awfully childish yanking his modules, right? But, you know, and now a lot of people are making accusations that NPM stole his code, which it's open source, so not really. But there are also a lot of people saying maybe it's time to move away from NPM and find a better way of maintaining packages. And that is probably the best answer.
I don't see it's going to solve the problems they're having. Because whatever repository you're using, if they get a trademark complaint, you're still going to have to deal with that trademark complaint.
Well, they didn't get a trademark complaint. They got a threat of a trademark complaint, and they went ahead and caved. Which sets a precedent that is interesting, that NPM might roll over for anybody who vaguely threatens lawyers.
NPM should have just waited for them to send a copy of the trademark.
Yeah, because NPM then could have claimed, well, it was either this or get sued, so sorry. That would have made them, they would have looked a lot better in the situation. So,
then
but
you also
NPM's,
have the, is it an existing company and do they have a reputation? Because I'm going, if Kik's an existing company and do they have a reputation? Well, apparently they may have trademarked Kik. I'm not going to wait for Walmart to send me a copy of their trademark. I already know Walmart's trademarked. I'm not a moron.
Yeah, but I'd never heard of Kik before. Well, I may have heard of it, but I didn't know of Kik before this. I know what Walmart is. That's a different argument. You know, some company that may or may not be known, I don't know. I something about it rubs me the wrong way, and it's annoying. But then the guy also is annoying too, so I don't know.
The only thing the repository might have done wrong is they may have wanted to wait until they actually got a copy of the trademark. That's the only thing I could have thinking. I think they could have done differently.
I feel like there's missing. There should be. It feels like there's emails missing. It feels like there should be. You know, there should have been more communication between NPM and the module author before they just assigned his module to somebody else. But I don't know. So I also don't much care for NPM and JavaScript as a language, so NPM's been nothing but a headache for me, so maybe I like picking on them. But I think it's funny the way everybody was pissed at this guy for pulling his modules down, and I think he had every right to do it.
He had a right. I have the right to walk up to any random group of people and yell racist slurs. Doesn't mean I'm not a dick for doing it.
So, well, the really dickish part is that so many people have given Kick shit over this. They're not going to use the module name. The blog post the Kick CEO made was that. First I heard about it was when our own builds started failing.
Nice.
And then he looks into it, and it's like, well, you know, we couldn't seem to work anything out with this guy, and, you know, the wording used here is not perfect. We're sorry for any impression that this was anything more than a polite request.
Now, that's a dick thing. You should be honest with what you're doing. He should have come out and said, it sucks that we look like we're steamrolling someone, if he wants to try to be sympathetic. And just be honest, it's a trademark. We're either going to be Kick and defend it, or we're going to have to change our name to something else.
So, but yeah, that's part of the problem here, is that Kick is continuously presenting themselves as, oh, we were just trying to ask nicely, we were just making a request, we weren't going to actually sue anybody, when you're literally, your second email is, we will sue your ass if you don't give us this name.
When you have to be a dick, be honest about being a fucking dick.
So, yeah, nobody's came out of this smelling like a rose. I think that's a fair statement. But I just, if you use NPM for anything, watch your modules for the next couple of days. Watch your code. Maybe audit a little of it. Make sure you don't see anything weird. Especially if you were using any of this guy's modules. So, next story up is from Ars Technica. FBI has said that, the Federal Bureau of Investigation said Monday that it might be able to break into the seized iPhone at the center of the encryption battle with Apple. That is why it wants a federal judge overseeing the litigation to vacate a Tuesday hearing on Apple. And let's summarize it. FBI thinks they might have figured out a way to crack this thing without getting Apple's help, and has therefore asked their judge to rescind the court order requiring Apple to assist the FBI. And apparently at 5:30 Pacific time, they canceled Tuesday's hearing, and Apple did not object to them removing the request.
Damn it! Damn it to hell!
Oh, you know why they did this.
The reason they rescinded the request is it looked like they were going to lose, because they've always had the resources to try to crack it. They could have probably handed it to the NSA and had them crack it.
Speaking
of,
that's my
next story. This was going to possibly set the precedent of corporations cannot be forced to create a product to help you spy on us. And the only reason this went to court is because they were stupid and make it public. The next time, they're not going to publicly ask a company. They're just going to send somebody over and be like, hey, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, can you help us out? And don't tell anybody. We won't tell anybody. You don't have to save face. We don't have to look like a tyrannical dictatorship.
Here's your national security letter.
We might even bring you some hookers and blow. Would you like some hookers and blow? The CIA's got the blow. We'll import some hookers from Nevada. You'll be fine.
Well, rolling right into that, this is from ZDNet. A former National Security Agency official turned whistleblower has spent almost a decade and half in civilian life. He says he's still pissed about what he's seen in the leak in the past 2 years. In a lunch meeting hosted by Contrast Security founder Jeff Williams on Wednesday, William Biney, a former NSA official who spent more than 3 decades at the agency, said the U.S. government's mass surveillance program has become so engorged with data they are no longer effective, losing vital intelligence in the fray. That he said, he said, can and has led to terrorist attacks succeeding. So the summary of the article is that the NSA is collecting so much data they can't parse it, they can't get through it all in time to, or at least not in time to do anything.
All I hear is wah.
Yeah, the data was that's why they couldn't stop the Boston bombing or the Paris shootings, because the data was all there, said Biney, because the agency isn't carefully and methodically setting its tools up for smart data collection that leaves analysts to search for a needle in a haystack. The data was all there. The NSA is great at going back over forensically for years to see what they were doing before that, but it doesn't stop it. Now, the only thing is, this guy's been out of the NSA for a while. So, I would take what he says with a grain of salt, but it's a funny comment. And it's probably true.
What was he doing prior to this interview? Because being out of the NSA doesn't necessarily mean being out of the loop, especially if he's working for a company that does a lot of business with the NSA.
I think he's working for a security company. Contrast Security.
If they're a subcontractor. If they're a subcontractor, he may still even be in the loop.
They say you never leave the intelligence agency unless you spy was a spy, job for life. One of those pulling the whistle incidents, and he spent his retirement lobbying for change and reform in industry. So he's a lobbyist now.
Okay. So less direct access to the NSA and more sucking congressmen's dicks.
So. But yeah, I think it's, I mean, it's funny how you roll right from the FBI saying no mas on the Apple case simply because it turned on them. They thought by saying, oh, it's terrorism, that they would have public support on their side. And immediately, you said, well, they're going to just hand it to the NSA. Well, the NSA can't deal with it either. So, but well,
I think the NSA could have cracked it.
Oh, I'm sure they could, too. Okay. Honestly, I can tell you how to crack it. It's not easy. But you can eventually, you have physical access to the hardware. You can eventually crack anything. First and foremost, the thing they could do is put it on a controlled network. And if they've remember they were doing all that data center tapping? If they happen to have the Psychros beat me to it in the chat room. If they happen to have Apple's signing keys, they can write their own damned update, and they could even subpoena Apple for the source code, because that's something that already exists. You know, they don't have to say, write us a new tool, just give us the code to what you have. Then they could write their own very easily. They just put it on a controlled network and then pretend to be Apple, literally spoof the DNA. You set up a fake internet. It's not actually that hard. You set up a fake internet, you pretend to be Apple, and if you have the correct keys to sign the update, you put the update on there yourself. And even if they don't have the key, they could have subpoenaed Apple for the source code and the key. Apple would then immediately change the key, but that wouldn't do jack for the phone that's turned off and sitting in the FBI's Faraday cage until they get it on their fake internet. The other way to do it would be to literally open the phone up, physically copy. You'd have to tap the data lines on all the memory chips, but you physically copy the memory chips, and then you start doing again, you get the source code from Apple for, you know, the encryption algorithm, and then you start the brooding, but you do it offline using an offline copy of the data, so it doesn't the phone can't wipe itself if it's not actually running. It's sort of like booting an encrypted... It'd be like taking an encrypted laptop, taking the drive out, plugging it into another machine, well, making a copy of it first, but then plugging it into another machine and, you know, trying to crack it using...
Going straight to the hardware, you don't get the software delay that makes just brute forcing it a bitch, do you?
No, you don't. That is how you do it. It's resource intensive. It is not easy. And at least during that initial making a copy of it, there is a risk of destroying the original device. So, but that is, if you wanted to do it, that is how you do it.
Well, I don't think they've ever wanted the information on the phone. I think they were going after a precedent.
I think you're right. So, anyways, moving on.
After the president.
Yes, Mr. President? I heard president.
Yeah, I didn't hear you say instead.
I haven't heard that one. Why are they going after the president?
The precedent.
Precedent.
Yes.
Aha! Not
how
president.
How much of that rum have you had?
There's maybe a fifth of the fifth left.
So the answer is a lot.
A lot.
All right. This next one's funny. It is from Vice News. Hang on. Where's the thing?
The Zionist media-controlled Vice News.
So, from motherboard.vice.com, this is hilarious. Wikipedia.
Are they owned by Gawker? Just kind of an aside.
No, they're owned by Vice. Gawker's in trouble, too. I don't have
that
story.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
I didn't really want to talk about it, but Gawker's in serious trouble, too. They've lost their court case. And
115 mil.
Yeah. They're going to appeal it. But don't
they
still have to put like 50 mil or something like that?
It's still a ruinous amount of money for them, yes.
Yeah.
it's a stupid, stupid amount of money in case to begin with.
Well,
anyways, sorry.
I don't disagree, but Gawker kind of brought that one on themselves.
No. He put out the video himself. It's his fault.
Did he put
no,
it out?
He did not.
He made the video. It's his fault.
But he didn't post it.
No, his friend, the guy whose wife he slept with, posted the video.
Yep, nothing wrong with that.
No.
Oh, then he should have gone after the friend, not possibly not Gawker.
Well, he asked Gawker to take it down, and then they refused, citing journalism. So.
Oh yeah, it's not journalism.
I don't know what journalism it serves because nobody gives a shit about Hulk Hogan, but at least not anymore. But anyways, this one's hilarious. Wikimedia and Facebook have given Angolians free access to their websites, but not to the rest of the internet. I remember talking about this story a little while back, how Facebook and Wikipedia were talking about setting up free ISPs, but you could only go to Facebook and Wikipedia. And it wasn't just for Angola. It was all kinds of different places they were talking about this. It was trying to deal with oppressive governments and insane internet costs. So naturally, Angolans have started hiding pirated movies and music in Wikipedia articles and linking to them on closed Facebook groups, creating a totally free, clandestine file-sharing network in a country where mobile internet data is extremely expensive. It's an undecidedly creative use of two services that were designed to give people in the developing world some access to the internet. But now that they're causing headaches for Wikipedia editors and Wikimedia Foundation, nobody's sure what to do about it. Because they invited these people in. These people are abusing the service. And now they're like, how do we get out of this without it being a PR nightmare?
You, again, be straightforward. Some people are using our service to watch Ant-Man, and we have to take it away from them.
You know how internet outrage works. You would have SJWs claiming so much crap.
Oh, then just play into it. Say, I'm sorry, we didn't realize they were black people.
No. Oh.
Wow.
You don't feed the bunnies. It just makes them If an SJW comes back with an SJW reason, you don't try to apologize. You just say you're retarded.
I'm going to set up an email address for you. It's going to be madman@galaxy15radio. Everyone who wants to complain can send it there. He will never look at it, but I'm at least going to set up the email address.
Oh no, if it's hate mail. My favorite thing was the one fan, I can't call it a fan letter because it was hate mail, but the one letter I got from the internet, it made my day for like a month. I just don't care.
So, anyways, yeah, Wikipedia Zero is a somewhat controversial program that zero rates Wikipedia and other Wikimedia properties, such as image and video database Wikimedia Commons on mobile phones in developing countries, meaning customers don't have to pay for data to use on the Unitel network as long as the data is in use associated with Wikimedia. So, what the agreement actually was they went to the cell phone service in the area and said, you know, they made the agreement that the cell phone service wouldn't charge for data that was going to Wikipedia and Facebook. Because apparently mobile data there is absurdly expensive. And I'm sure a lot of people are probably poor, so... But the fact that people immediately, first thing, what do? They turn it into a file sharing network. It's like, yes!
I like it.
I think it's amazing.
I love it. So, let's see. Next one up is from AOL. Does anybody care that Anonymous posted Trump's social security number and phone numbers?
No, I'm fairly certain they've been leaked before. He's got security clearance or something.
I don't even think Trump cares.
Another story from Brand Eating. This is the one that did the paid advertising for Chick-fil-A a while back. At least I think it was. This one's funny, though. McDonald's is testing Happy Meal boxes that fold into VR glasses for your phone. Google Cardboard from a Happy Meal box. So not only are you eating a Happy Meal, you're then taking the grease-stained box and holding it up to your face and hoping you don't get some kind of... It's like, is that French fry? Is that special sauce in your eyes, Timmy?
Oh, God, that's so fucking stupid.
The specialized Happy Meal box looks to be made of cardboard and works similar to the Google Cardboard Viewer, except it won't cost you $15 or more. You simply have to take the box apart and fold it together into a viewer. After that, you slide your smartphone in and you have your own Happy Goggles. And they've got a concept video on the page, which I've not actually watched. It's being tested over in Sweden. The website for Happy Goggles indicates that the potential is there for it to be expanded to other countries. The website also includes a link for a downloadable educational ski game endorsed by the National Swedish Ski Team that works with the viewer. So it's a McDonald's box that turns into a Google Cardboard.
I thought Google Cardboard was stupid. This is just stupid with French fries. Ooh, it's better than Google Cardboard. It comes with French fries.
And it's possibly special sauce.
I don't like the Big Mac because of the special sauce.
You're weird.
It's Thousand Island dressing.
So? It's good.
Will French fry grease ruin your screen? I mean, how does Gorilla Glass stand up to that?
I'm not sure. Let's ask a fat person. One moment. No. There.
Okay. Yeah. Hang on. Let me. It's time for this.
I don't know. I could have one comment on the Trump thing.
All right,
and the only thing is, I think it's crap to try to force someone out of a conversation. If you don't think his views are right, point out why he's wrong and give a better argument.
Ah! Sorry. I reopened the Trump page so I get the link back. Got a fucking autoplay video. I hate those.
But that's the only crap thing I see about that, or the only real opinion I have on it. Yeah. If you don't like him, point out why he's wrong, win the argument.
Yeah.
And if you can't prove why he's wrong, shut the fuck up and deal with it or find a better argument.
That required people being rational.
Yeah. Oh. That's it.
Zach, you have anything before we do Digital Ledger?
Nope.
You're just timing it so I have to play it backwards again, aren't you?
Yep. Yo!
Alright. So, got a couple of things for Digital Dojo. One Static sent me. It's a program called CWX Control Panel. And it purports to completely remove the Get Windows 10 notifications and pop-ups. And it looks safe so far. I've been playing with it a little bit on the broadcast box, actually. I originally was intentionally not upgrading the broadcast box to see if it ever upgraded itself before the free upgrade ran out. And every time I log into it, the pop-up comes up, and I've actually had that pop-up mess up my TeamViewer a couple of times. So, yeah, I curse pretty loudly when that happens. But so I went ahead and put it on the broadcast. You know, testing random software in the broadcast box, right? Anyways, it's like, well, test it in prod. Fuck it. So far so good with it. It blocks
the pop-up
and can set up. Everyone tests in prod. I mean, it supposedly completely turns off the Windows 10 updates and can block the updates from coming in. So for my quick testing so far, pretty good. It has made the little icon go away, and I reconnected to the box a couple of times and haven't got the pop-up, although that pop-up usually waits a couple hours before it comes up again on me. So I don't know. We shall see. Because I do eventually intend to upgrade the box to 10 just to get it done with. I'm just kind of holding off as long as I can. I think the free upgrade period is like over in July. So sometime in June or early July, I'll probably go ahead and upgrade it to 10 just to get it done. That or, you know, roll it over to Linux, because I think all of the software I used to run the broadcast box would actually work on Linux. It's just been pure laziness that I haven't done it. So there's that, but I do intend to do it, so I didn't want to completely kill the option. I just want to make the pop-ups go away. And then the final thing I have for Digital Dojo is Cubes OS has put out version 3. Now, I installed this on a flash drive. I was playing around with it on my laptop. And for what it is, it has come a long way, and it's really nice. Cubes is a combination distro of both the Xen hypervisor and some heavily customized Linux images. What it does is it presents you a single desktop that is actually running multiple virtual machines. And each of these virtual machines, and the menus make it very clear, and you know they put different color borders around windows from one VM or the other. And it makes it very clear what you're doing. The idea is that you are isolating different components of your computer from each other. So if you have one VM you do your web browsing in and another one you do your taxes in, although you do your taxes in a web browser these days, so you have one VM you browse 4chan in and another VM you do your taxes in, the 4chan VM cannot touch the VM with your taxes in it. Now, the thing that I ran into two major problems with it. First and foremost, any kind of hardcore video acceleration does not work. There are some hacks in their forums where people have put multiple video cards in the machine and then passed through and gotten it to work a little bit. But out of the box, you're not playing any games on it. Now, if you do nothing but live in the terminal code and do web browsing and the occasional open an office, you'll love it. But if you ever want to do a game, not so much. You got to do dual boot for that, or you know, do some kind of a oddball hack to get it to go. It does do. It does pick up your graphics card. They recommend an Intel graphics card. It will pick up your graphics card for the primary machine, so your desktop can use effects. But anything outside of basic 3D, it's really not going to do. The nice thing, though, is you can install it on a flash drive. So I took 128 gig. What kind of brand is that? It's a SanDisk. That's one of the fastest ones you could buy a year ago. USB 3, 128 gig flash drive. I installed it on there as a native OS. Playing around with it on my laptop. The other problem I ran into, that particular laptop is an Ultrabook. So its RAM is soldered in, and so I can't upgrade it. So it's at 4 gigs, and there's not putting any more in it. And at 4 gigs, when I hit the fifth virtual machine up, it started saying not enough memory to start a sixth. So that was annoying. Primarily because three of the virtual machines were system VMs. It actually spins up, you know, you have the primary desktop, which is the actual DOM 0 in ZenSock, the system. Then you have a VM that's running your network, and so your network is actually isolated. You have a virtual router, is the way to explain it. But the other thing it does is it includes a Hunix, which is a virtual router that automatically pipes everything through Tor. So I think that's probably a better setup than Tails, because you then spin up a Hunix client VM, and the only path to the internet that client VM sees is through this Hunix router, and this Hunix router is automatically piping everything through Tor. So even if you get like your machine owned inside that VM, there's no revealing your real identity. Like, usually if you're using, you know, Tails or something like that, they can, if you go to the wrong website, you get some malware on the box, it could potentially beacon out across the clear net and give away your IP, right? If you're using Tails, these are concerns. But I don't think that could happen on Cubes with the VM isolation. So I would say if you're going to run Cubes, you want to have a lot of RAM and a decent processor and no intention to play games. So a gaming rig without the video card. actually, a server. Like, if you got an old server kicking around that you use as a desktop, this thing would it'd be perfect. So, I don't know. Static, did I explain it well enough for you to understand it, what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I understand it. I don't see a need for it personally, but...
Well, I mean, yeah, I just dual boot, or I... You know, I actually have some, I have certain machines that I only use for certain things, and it's when you have the blue laptop that you only do your finances on, and you know that you only do your finances on the blue laptop, and the blue laptop is locked up in a in my case a bag with a lock on it, and that goes in a locked filing cabinet, but you know, offline.
So, yep.
You know, it might be safe. You know, you take all your data, put it on the computer, unplug it, put it in the backyard, bury it in concrete. They might not be able to get to it. Maybe. But in my case, I'm putting it in a filing cabinet, so that should kind of act as a Faraday cage. Kind of. But anyways, you know, you kind of get that physical separation of this machine is for this. Which unfortunately means every time I turn it on, I have to sit through, you know, 20 minutes of Windows updates for that.
But what if you never connected to the internet?
Well, then I wouldn't be able to do my finances on it.
Why? You can always buy TurboTax software.
Yeah, but TurboTax isn't the only thing anyways, not going to worry about that. It requires an internet connection for me to do that stuff.
Yeah.
But
there is such a thing as too paranoid. You do know that, right?
Yes, there is.
I do it on
Windows
because one of the websites I use it won't work on Linux. It does bad user agent checking. Although, you know, I've not tried it since Chrome made some of their changes. Although Chrome is arguably just as bad. So, Windows can be secure if you know what you're doing and don't click shit. I think you know, in the 4 years I've been doing pure decking, that's ultimately been my message. Don't click shit.
Or know what you're clicking.
I don't. Speaking of Windows, that is one thing with Cubes, is it actually can. They've got some early version stuff that it can take a Windows VM and run Windows software as well, and it will implement it or integrate it into the desktop like it's another set of applications. Again, no 3D, but they've got the client software out so that you could load a Windows VM and then run Office and have Office running isolated from. So that might be a good argument, actually, you know, isolating Windows from everything else. But Cycros, last time I tried it, several websites I used to do my finances did not work on Linux. So, and it's like, if I've got to go through the trouble of installing Wine and installing a browser inside of Wine to make it work, I might as well just be running fucking Windows, because it's just as vulnerable at that point. I have, in the past, on a test rig, had Wine installed, and installed software that I knew was infected, thinking I could deal with it, and had a fucking Windows virus running on my Linux machine to see what it did. And it's interesting to do it that way, because you actually see all the files it creates and all the files it touches, because the Linux file system, you know, Wine is just kind of wrapping that, but it all ends up going into a bottle. And so it's interesting. Get a different view of what a virus actually does. See all the files it manipulates and all the shit running in memory, because you can see that a hell of a lot easier on a Linux rig, especially when running through Wine. But that does mean that if you say click shit, it is possible to have Windows viruses living on a Linux machine through Wine. So yeah, at some point it's like, well, if you gotta deal with it, just fucking deal with it, right? I'm out. I'm done. Anybody else have anything before I start closing something out?
Nope.
Madman?
Nope, I'm good.